Hey, my love, welcome to season 8 of Adulting with Ebony. Today's episode is the one about healing vulnerability to visibility. And I'm so looking forward to you hearing this beautiful conversation with Abby Osho. Abby Osho is the founder of Soul Melanin. She is a BAFTA award-winning retreat creator, visibility coach, and the author of Becoming Visible. And in this episode, we talk a little bit about our birth stories and our, I guess, the very first parts of childhood that informed who we have become. And we touch a little bit on who we could have been if we didn't choose to alchemize, to shift, to rewrite our story. And so much of the work that I do in the world is about shifting your perspective or showing you that you have the power to shift your orientation, to shift your perspective, to retell your story and therefore live your life in a different way and be different and have a different experience and different outcome. And Abby's story is really quite remarkable. I really hope that after you have listened to the episode, you go and find the documentary on Netflix as well. Without further ado, enjoy. But please do come and let me and Abby know how you got on with this episode, your ahas, just any takeaways that you have. Please rate, review, and share the podcast. It means so much to me. It's such a labor of love. And I really have, I can't believe we're on season 8, but it's been such a journey for me. And I really want to get the podcast more out there, get more listeners. These people that I bring to you, these stories, the episodes that I share, I really take time and intention to pick people who are really interesting and interested. And they are not always really known, well known, and some of them are, but they are not people on the kind of treadmill of podcasts. And so it would mean a great deal to me and to them if you would review the podcast, share the podcast, if you are enjoying it, if you agree with me that people, that these people, the interviews that I'm doing, the conversations that I'm having are interesting and worth sharing. Thank you so much. Let me know how you get on, and I will see you next week. Welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the podcast that, let's be honest, has evolved a lot over the last 7 seasons. Season 8 is still for creative, neurospicy, Gen X or millennial misfits who are becoming empowered, embodied, and fully expressed. It's for you if the intersection of the physical and mystical is your jam. This is the show where I actively encourage you to feel your feelings rather than think them. Glow up, not grow up, and become full of yourself, because who the fuck else should you be full of? Each week I have intimate, unfiltered conversations about what it takes to be fully resourced and have happy, healthy, rich relationships as a dopamine deficient adult. I'm your host, Ebony Allard, aka Ebony Alchemy, a late diagnosed ADHD, combined type Asperger's in case you like specifics, artist, mystic, and self-actualization facilitator. I'm an international award-winning multiple brain integration technique master coach with a special interest in embodied human design for neurodivergence. I've been in the personal development, creativity, and entrepreneurship spaces all of my life, and as a 5-2 emotional manifesting generator with left angle cross of distraction, I'm here to help you know what to trust and what to tune out. Each week, I share what you need to know, perspective, shifting on wisdom, and practical ways for you to feel safe, removing your camouflage for more belonging, acceptance, and fulfillment. Ready? Let's go. Abby, I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. And I just want to say thank you so much for coming on and being open to having a real, raw conversation about we don't know what yet.
Yeah, and I love the fact that you said, well, first of all, great to be here. Thank you for inviting me. And a real raw conversation about we don't know what yet. That's like, oh, yeah, I love that. Yeah. So it's great to be here, Ebony. Thank you.
I guess I'll start with, what does adulting mean for you?
It means being a grown up,
Yes.
being in and with the world of grown-ups as I believe grown-ups to be. And also within that being a grown-up, there's still the childlike part of me that consists of part of my adulting. It's not like those two things are separate and I can't do this because I'm now this, which I used to think it is now, it's all of it. Yeah, that's what adulting means to me. And just continuing, I guess, the journey of exploring myself, exploring my own hidden truths, and recognizing how they are such a deep part of my life. When I recognize that they are there and I'm able to speak those truths out loud, that's really the journey of what I would say almost like the ascendance to adulting in its entirety.
Yeah, I feel like the difference between like being a grown up or doing grown up things, or the impression that we have of what an adult is when we aren't one.
Yeah.
It's like that's a lot more performative than the reality. And
Yes.
there is something about this initiation. There's something about like growing into ourselves or finding mastery or like doing, living, being it rather than
Yeah.
thinking about it. Or, you know, there is a real difference between the mental or the thinking or the theory of
Yes.
adulting versus like actually living it in wisdom and experience, right?
Absolutely. Living it, wisdom, experience, the reality, the everyday lived experience, and what that gets to really feel like. And it's all part of, I guess, our evolution, right? Because I can remember there were days when it just felt like, oh, it's too heavy, it's too overwhelming, you know, and not being able to see that the next few days weren't going to feel like that. And then there comes a time when those heavy or overwhelming feelings, not to say that they disappear because they don't, but there's almost like another level of exposure, another level of expansion where I found myself sometimes thinking, I don't, those feelings aren't there anymore. Like, where are they? Like, where are those feelings? And they're not there because I've allowed myself to open up even more. And now I can feel almost like there's a lot more peace in my pores. I'm not trying to fill my pores with something, you know, to be the adult and do all the things. There's just peace in the pores and all gets to be accepted. And that's a process of evolution. Yeah.
And I feel like, so in your work, working with kind of visibility, working with healing wounds, you know, all of that sort of thing,
Yeah.
that is maturity, that is evolution, as you just said. And some people really love the word healing. Some people find that it has an air of there is something broken or not working, and you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And I'm curious whether you think that everybody has this, you know, a heavy evolution journey to go on, or whether it's just some of us.
Yeah, I don't think everybody does. I think it's just some of us. I think that, well, I believe that, you know, we choose to come here. And whilst we might not remember why we're here, we made a choice to come from the spiritual plane, if you want to call it that, to this earth plane. And so, in our choosing to come here, we chose the journey that we wanted to take. And I think for newer souls that are landing here now, they're probably not going to, they don't want the deep work. Like, you know, they're newer to it. But to older souls, for those that believe in past lives or not, I do. For people that have been here many times before, and I believe that I have, and I feel that you have as well, Ebony, like, we can go that much deeper. And so I think that whilst we all have a journey and a story, possibly around healing those wounds, it's very different. The layers of wounds that we are healing is very different for each of us.
I feel like you articulated that really beautifully, and I really something landed for me in a new way as you were speaking, which is that when I was younger, I believed that somewhere I used to kind of say to myself, why I was done, like, why I've been here this many times, why did I pick this like deep, dark, scorpionic, transformational eighth house, whatever you want to call it, like, why did I pick this? I was done, I don't need this shit. And somewhere I felt like it was punishment, like somewhere I had, it was like self-flagellation, right? Like, why did I put myself in this family? Why did I give myself this birth story? Why did I give, why? Why did I give myself parents even who said, you chose this, right? Like, why? And as you were talking, I'm like, huh, new levels of depth, not punishment, mastery, you know, new levels that are available because of, right, that I chose to come, and what an honor, what a privilege to go that deep. And one of the things that's happening for me a lot at the moment is the reflection of people talking about the way I like to seek and the way I like to go into depth being heavy, and me being like, I mean, like, if it's heavy to you, it's heavy to you, but to me, it's not heavy, it's adventure, it's depth, it's richness, it's texture. But not everyone has that capacity or desire, right?
No, they don't. And I think that's, interesting, just reflecting back to you. I was fostered at 5 weeks old, just so that you've got a bit of my history, to a white working class family in Sussex. And as a black child of Nigerian heritage, some will see here, whatever that looks like, I couldn't imagine why I would choose to live totally outside of my cultural heritage. I just didn't get it. And I didn't really, for many, many years later, I didn't tell anybody because I felt embarrassed, ashamed, guilty. I felt there was going to be this external judgment. If I told you that about me, you were suddenly going to think this of me, all based on my lived experience of growing up. So I closed my, it was like I had this iron armor around me, and you would get in so far and then you weren't getting in any further, because as soon as you did, I would start to feel insecure and unsafe, because that was, again, my childhood experience of growing up in very racist times back then, because people didn't know any better and there were no other black people in those areas, or very, very few.
Very few, yeah.
And so I think it was only, so I had so many layers that were just frozen. It was like I was living in my own freezer. And I was happily there, happily willing to never unthaw, because the thought of doing that and melting down and being a softer version of me scared me, because then I thought that other people would see me differently. I wouldn't know who I was, because I'd had to always put up this kind of, I'd always lived behind this mask. And then it gets to the stage where, fast forward many, 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 many years, there was just something there that I knew, like from the outside, everything looked great, great job, car, house, all the rest of it. But inside, Ebony, I was crumbling. And the minute that I couldn't do it anymore, it was like everything started to break down. My whole world started to break down. And it was like, wow, who the hell am I? Like, who is Abby? I had no idea. And so it was really kind of, I guess, the healing work, leaning. I had no choice but to go back and start to heal the wounds. It was the only way that I could start to feel into who I was becoming, because I'd run from it for so many years. And when I actually started to share with people a bit about my background and how I'd been privately fostered, and it's not for this podcast, but there were, over a 20-year period, there were over 70,000 Nigerian children who were privately fostered, and primarily to white working class families. I'm going to put that into a little bit of context so people understand. So between 1959 and 1997, what happened was the UK colonial government that were in Nigeria came out and they gave the country back, in inverted commas, but they still wanted to kind of keep their own structures in place. And the only way they could do that is by inviting Nigerian men primarily to come here to retrain and then to go back and take those jobs that they were leaving. And so that's what happened. But in amongst that, these men, my father, my grandfather, you know, they had never been outside of compound living. They'd always lived as an extended family. So to come to a country at that time where there were no blacks, no dogs, no Irish, and you were living in a damp room where nobody really wanted you to be there, had huge mental health effects. And so they decided, okay, let them bring their partners and their wives. And when they do, they can have like dual citizenship if they have their children here. That's what happened. And then, but they were never going to fund the children. You know, that wasn't part of the strategy. So there was a magazine called The Nursery World. And this magazine used to have little adverts in the back that said, West African child seeking nanny. And so these people from all over the UK, not in London, and they were mainly, I would say all the ones that I know were privately fostered to white working class families, would come and they'd have a conversation, and then we would be fostered to them whilst our parents studied as doctors, lawyers, nurses, and then worked in the evenings in the factories to fund themselves and to fund their children being looked after because there was no extended family. And that's kind of how it came around. But if you can imagine that word private fostering, we were not on anybody's radar. So,
well, that's quite an incredible thing, right? Because it's not only is it a culture out of a culture in a new place with the kind of the youngness of those parents who not only have they got a new child potentially for the first time or whatever, but also in having no idea of the culture that they're bringing this to.
No idea.
Thinking that they're going on an adventure to also then be not, like there's so many layers to that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And there is a direction I want to take the podcast and I don't want to go in on it, but like you said, context is really important and the story is really important and beautiful. But I do have one question, which is when I hear that and when I first heard you talk about it, my assumption was that you didn't then have a relationship with your birth parents. But when I'm hearing you talk about it now, I'm like, oh, was there this dual thing? Yeah.
So, great question. And for many children who were privately fostered, it was dual. They would have a relationship with their birth parents. They would come down and visit them at the weekend. They'd bring them clothing, whatever it was, etc. And then they'd go back to London. Sometimes it was once every 2 weeks, sometimes once a month. But with my birth parents, yeah, I didn't have a relationship. They were there when I was very small. I don't remember it. I don't remember seeing them. But my mother, who I have a relationship now, many, many years later, they weren't around when I was younger. So it was a different relationship that I had to most of the privately fostered children that I knew then and I know now.
Thank you for sharing that. It's so fascinating. I've just, before we recorded this, come off a conversation with an astrologer friend of mine who is also going to come on the podcast at some point, talking about a transition that I am going through at the moment in my life, which is around identity. And as such, she wanted to talk about my birth story and kind of how I came into the world, which I, you know, for people listening, I've talked about before, but I was born at 26 weeks, 26, 27 weeks. I was born 2.5 months premature in France to parents who absolutely loved me, but were living in a place with no electricity, no running water, and no roof. And I spent the first 2.5 months of my life in an incubator, surrounded by nurses and away from family who couldn't come and see me, couldn't afford to be present, had no skin on skin, you know, all of those. So totally different story, but also, you know, what happens when we have these less ordinary birth stories?
Yeah.
Is that there is a a story that forms around who we are,
Yes.
how we fit, our relationship with safety, our relationship with belonging,
yes,
our relationship with self-esteem, our relationship with confidence, which comes from our mum and our dad and that initial,
absolutely.
all of those things. And so, yeah, the piece I wanted to, I feel like we are both equipped to talk about from our own perspective,
Yeah.
what the impact of those unacknowledged assumptions has initially, and then what it means to rewrite the story. Because as facilitators, as coaches, as authors, as story writers, we talk about, well, you know, you get to rewrite your story.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what does that mean in practical terms, right? Like, do you write it? Do you live it? And so I'd love just to have a conversation a little bit about that, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So for me, my rewriting of my story was that I was, you know, I was this girl who had, you know, I didn't know where I identified. I never really felt accepted, and I felt less than, because I was always told I was less than. So when you were at a very young age, you just believed that to be truth. And so the process for me rewriting my own story was, once I'd started to unpeel back the layers, and I had to, as I said, start to heal the wounds and do the work, and then understand that I could rewrite my story. It was, for me, it was a doing. For me, it was a sharing. For me, it was, oh my gosh, you know, the first person outside of my family that I told that I was privately fostered. I'm going to be really quick, but it's a interesting story. I was in an adult French class in the evening, adult learning, and this Nigerian man, he was blind, called Dio, he was there. He came at me and said, my name's, I said, I'm Nigerian, and da da da. And I just thought, oh my gosh, I don't want him to know I'm Nigerian, because he's going to ask me something in my language and I'm not going to understand, and then I'm going to feel silly and small. So I just didn't say anything. Very end of it, he said to me, what part of the Caribbean are you from? And I said, God, I'm going to say to this. And I just said, actually, I'm not from the Caribbean. I'm Nigerian. My parents are Nigerian. And he was like, you're Nigerian. Why didn't you say that? And he banged his hands on the table and he was like, I'm so pleased that you're Nigerian. It's a totally different effect than what I was expecting. And I just breathed this sigh of relief, thinking, oh my God, he's not questioning me. He's not belittling me. He's not speaking in a language I don't understand. That was my story. That was the story that always used to come. And so it was kind of from that I thought, you know what, actually, if somebody asks me now, I'm actually going to tell them, doesn't matter how they react, because this is me, this is part of my cultural heritage. And it was really from then, from speaking that out loud, that first time around, that I started to share, you know, my story about being privately fostered. And then, through me being able to do that, Ebony, what happened was I was able to really connect with myself on a deeper level. I was able to start to unpeel the mask and start to talk about, you know, some of the childhood memories. Both were traumatic and both were incredible as well. And, you know, even go back to the place where I used to live that I just didn't go for years, because I thought it would take me back to where I was as a child, which it would have if I'd allowed myself. But as we know, when you're on that journey of changing your story and connection to self, there's a courage that comes with that. There's a courage and a confidence to know that it's going to be okay, even in those moments when I'm driving and my hands are shaking, thinking, oh my God, is this really going to be okay for me to go back there? But telling myself, yes, it is, believe, and trust. And so trust became a big part of my narrative and my story. And I think from the space of trusting myself, doing these small little steps, it's like, oh my God, I did that. I spoke about that. Wow. And there was almost like this feeling, I think I'd had this intense gut feeling about almost being swallowed up into my oldness of the story. And now the newness was coming through, the way that I wanted to create it for myself, and really how I had decided I wanted to be seen by others. started to become my story. And in that, the visibility piece came, because for so many years I've been invisible, very happily invisible. And when I wrote my book, Becoming Visible, it was really that journey of me deciding and giving myself permission to become visible and to be counted, and to understand that whether I, if I didn't speak my language, if I was a Nigerian and I had other people around me that were Nigerian, that I wasn't going to feel less than anymore. You know, if I was going to be speaking to all of these women who had been privately fostered or who had maybe felt an identity or a belonging concern, it didn't matter, because I could bring richness to the tapestry of their table as well as sharing from my truth. And so the story just started to take on a whole new life of its own. For me, it wasn't so much about the writing. It was about the doing. It was about the being. It was about the embodying. And even in the embodiment of the story, there was times when I'd embody it and then I'd be, that feels a bit too much. And I'd lean back. I'd lean back and I'd be like what I call in the in-between of, can I do this? Can I do this? Can I do this? Can I do this? And I could be there for a little while sometimes, until I felt it was time to lean back in again and continue the nuances and emotion of the new story. So, yeah, that's how I embrace and still embrace it every day.
I, like I told you at the beginning of this podcast, I had a little look at your human design before we jumped on, just to be like, what am I dealing with here on the inside? And it's not something that Abby knows well. So I had a little look, and literally as you're talking, it's really exciting for me, because I can see these pieces in your design, right? And the other thing that I've never really experienced before is someone who is energetically very, very similar, like in terms of our wiring. We have, you and I have the exact same centers defined and undefined, except that you additionally have your Ajna, which is your concepts part of your brain, defined. So you have a set way, whereas mine is open. But everything else, we have defined the same and undefined the same. And then you are a manifesting generator like I am, and but you're a single definition. I have these two parts that I have to reconcile, right?
Yeah.
And what makes you a manifesting generator is this channel from your sacral to your throat. And that is between gate 20 and gate 34. And gate 20 is the now knower, and it's in your throat. And gate 34 lives in the sacral, right? And which is about our, what both of these are really about. Power. They're really about what you are, what you respond to, what you are driven by, what you have impulse for, and then speaking, right? And we both have this channel 11 to 56, which is, and the one we just spoke of is your sun and your earth. And then we both have 1156, which is my sun, right, in this, which is a storyteller. So you have this defined throat, which is really, and that's called the channel of curiosity. And so it's really like this beautiful piece of talking out the curiosity.
Yeah.
And then there was something else that you said earlier, where you said you were fostered at 5 weeks, and numerologically, the five is the physical body.
Yeah.
Alchemy. It is the messenger. It's the storyteller. And you're also born in the fifth month, which means that your karma, the thing you're here to master, is the body or the message or the alchemy or the you know, it's this throat piece. It's really about the story, right?
Yeah.
So I see this, like, in all of this, it's all woven in of like, oh, you're really here to speak your story and to you have an undefined G center, which is our identity, which is our direction. But so there is emotion, and we also share a subtle wave. So all of this emotion is there, and they're like speaking the story and feeling really like courageous. And like, so the G center is also about its direction, its identity, but it's also about worthiness and like lovable or unlovable.
Yes.
And we have the will center, which you have defined and I have defined, which is like commitment and drive and what I want, and they both form part of the heart. But that fear of, and you have an undefined spleen, so do I, so the kind of, people see us as really courageous, they see us as really bold. It's like you use your voice, you talk up, you have things to say, you're really articulate. And it's like, Yeah, but on the inside, I'm terrified that, and that's the open, the underfungi in the spleen. I'm terrified that I will be unlovable, or that I will not belong, or that in sharing my story, I am going to ruin something. I'm going to break the tiny connection to family, community, identity, direction that I have that is so wafer thin anyway. And that's terrifying. And then as you do it, and as you live it, and as you start to master that five and like owning your voice, that changes into wisdom. And where courage is always the bridge, right, from fear to love.
The love, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And when you were talking about, you said I didn't rewrite it, like I had to do it. And before you were talking about mask and armor. And for me, it was like I have always identified with this level of masking and armoring, which is what the physical body, the five,
Yes.
does for us, right, in some way. And there's this piece, and I wrote down like reclaiming or owning the story before we can rewrite it. There's this step, this stage
100%.
where we're pushing it away. And the first time I went to therapy, I had a dad who was a therapist. So, obviously I don't need therapy. And when I went through my Saturn return at 28, I went to therapy and I had a particular model. We were going to do 8 sessions. And in the second session, she asked me about my birth story and I shared it with her. And she was like, "Why didn't you lead with this? Like, this is it. This is where the good." And I was like, "Why are you making it a big deal?" Because it had never been a big deal. In fact, it had been like, "You were in such a hurry to get through. You have been in charge since the moment, la la la. Like, you wanted this, you wanted this." And it's the first time someone had said, "Wow, like, how are you? What do you need? Let's go back and look after and reclaim that baby." And I was like, "I never want to talk about this story again. I am strong. I am, I am mask, armor, right? Like, I do not need to go into the vulnerable space and relive what it meant to be a vun like an unheld baby." But somewhere, if I really look at, well, what changed? What has opened love for me? What has softened and allowed me to take my armor off? It is owning that that story is part of who I am, and that I cannot alchemize it, cannot shift it, I cannot rewrite it until I claim it.
Thank you. Beautiful share. And and it's, like your story, your power. And it's a reclamation of our internal power through the sharing of our own unique story, because nobody else has what we have. And I think getting to that space and understanding that actually, rather than me hiding from my story and always telling people like 75% of me and trying to navigate and weave around the bits I didn't want to say, by actually telling the 25% of me, it was so much more powerful, because it was real, it was raw, it was vulnerable, but it was me, and you get all of me. And it helped me, I also think, discern. It helped me to understand that not everybody's going to get me or like me. And for many years, I just wanted everyone to like me. I wanted everyone to love me. I couldn't do the I'm not liked or I'm not loved, because it took me back to when I felt not loved and liked as a child. And that was the wound. That was the big wound that I really needed to work on. But now, like being in kind of, I guess, all of the fullness, being able to share the stories on so many other levels, it's me, and I know I'm not for everybody, and that's absolutely fine, and I'm here now because I'm not for everybody. But in that, it's not a reflection of me, it's just a reflection that th this is how it is. And energetically, for whatever reason, we are not aligned right now. Doesn't mean to say that we won't be in a year or 2 years' time. And so every day, even within these kind of awarenesses of having some quite challenging conversations with some people, sometimes I see them now as, oh, where's the learning in that? Oh, that's activated me. Still a bit of healing to do there, Abby. Thought you'd done it and you haven't done it, girlfriend, you know? And so it's so interesting how we evolve as individuals and how there's much more of a fullness and a wholeness of, you know, walking into sometimes what I know are going to be somewhat challenging situations, but walking in with my heart open, knowing that it's might be not safe to have my heart open, but knowing with my heart in that space that the conversation I'm going to have with that individual, even if it's not particularly comfortable, even if it's messy and a bit crappy, I'm coming from it from a really heart space of love and holding that person. Sometimes I don't see that at the time. And it would challenge me, Ebony, not to take that personally. But I know that my intention was always pure. And there will be a time, not always, that they'll come back to me. And that might take 2 years or 3 years, something to say, you know what? Actually, I needed to hear that, but I wasn't ready then, but I understand what you're saying now. And so,
Well,
yes.
what I was going to say, and I wasn't sure that I was going to say it, and now feels like the perfect time for me to say it. So when we first met, and like you, I always believe that we meet the exact right people at the exact right moment, and that, you know, every retreat container community is a constellation, right? And so
Yes,
always
I love that word.
got that magic. And you know, I literally looked at your human design and our similarities, you know, 5 minutes before we started talking. But the first time we had a proper, no, we had lots of conversations, but the first intimate, real, kind of edgy, uncomfortable conversation that we had was at the end of a retreat that we were both on with Susie Ashworth.
That's right.
And you, and I'm probably not going to say this right, and I'll just say my side of it, but you asked me something very directly, or you kind of communicated something to me that at the time, like if I had been asked it at another time, I potentially would have found it quite triggering or found it quite confronting, or quite difficult. But what I felt, and then the language was really direct, and the purity of your heart was so clear and so present. And in reflection, you know, a reflection of me and my where I'm at and the evolution that I've made and all of those things. So the response was able to be a very vulnerable, real, untriggered response. And
Absolutely.
it's I find it really interesting when we look at these things of like, oh, sometimes it's also a reflection of ourselves, because the words I just said about how you communicated with me are one, how a lot of people see me a lot of the time, and also like what you said to me, which was, you know, you come across as quite cold or quite like aloof or quite distant, but actually you're not.
You
And I'm
come
like,
across quite distant. Yeah, that's what I said.
and it's such a mirror, right? Of like, yes, this is how sometimes people perceive me, right? Of like, it's that similarity of like, I'm watching, or I want to check that it's safe for me to reveal all of myself, or whatever. What is really interesting is I listen to you talk and kind of have this mirror experience around that reclamation and around the amount that we share and when we share it and who we share it with. That retreat for me was really an experience of having the same thing reflected in a group environment of like, oh, you first of all, you come across this way, but then when I get to know you, you're more like this. Is now feels powerful. Of like, and you can think whatever you want, that's on you. Like, I'm having my experience, and my experience was I didn't really want to give any more of myself until this moment. Whereas before I would have gone, well, I was wrong and I've made this person uncomfortable. And what can I do to not make somebody uncomfortable?
It's so interesting. And I remember very clearly that conversation that we had, kind of in the middle of like a party, but
And then that's the other thing, right? Like everyone had like
we
music
had the deepest conversation.
celebrating, and like it was like such a like, really? We're gonna do this now?
What I also remember, Ebony, was that it was really I remember saying to you, like, you taught me something, like in your ex in your sharing of where you were at and why you come across in that way sometimes. And it wasn't from an explanation, it was a sharing of this is all of me, which was very powerful. And what was beautiful about that conversation is that I remember saying, thank you. You've taught me something that I wouldn't have recognized or known before. And I really appreciate the learning that I've now taken away from you. And so it was a beautiful conversation, wasn't it?
It really was, and it was that beautiful conversation of recognizing that we are medicine for each other without trying, right? You don't have to be. And that part of that was that experience for me of like, I'm going to come to this retreat and I'm not going to like be showy. I'm not going to give more of me. I'm not going to be in the middle of it all of the time. I'm going to like step back and I'm just going to be, and there's going to be no performative. There's going to be no extension. I'm going to be subtle. I'm going to be over here and see how that lands and whether I'm okay with it. And yeah, I love that we are always interrelated. And if we're willing to stay in that really heart open place of unassuming or not instantly defensive, not instantly armor, not instantly mask, right? Which for both of us is evolved territory, is part of adulting of like, huh, I can be in this discomfort without instantly masking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a huge leap. And continues to be a leap that is one of expansion and also being, fully honest here, I will sometimes contract before I can go back into the expansion. Like, it's not like one big leap after another, after another, after another. The default stories can still sort of say, I'm here, are you listening to me? No, I'm not. So that, I still have that dance sometimes. And I accept now that that is just part of the dance of life. And part of the dance of my life is being able to have these conversations with you and others and know that we're all interwoven in one kind of dance or another. It's, are we choosing to sit down and be still in the dance? Or are we choosing to get up and flow with the dance? We always get the choice, don't we? And I think where I feel I'm at now, in terms of the fullness of me, in terms of the work that I love and I do, and really owning all of that, and knowing sometimes that, doing the work or putting ourselves out there, it's going to pee people off sometimes. It is. But also knowing that in the peeing of people off, I'm still there standing strong in my truth. So it doesn't matter.
Well, and for me, that piece is right. Like, I'm going to piss people off whether I try to or not. So I may as well just be myself, because the thing is, people are going to, that's part of the like this five energy again, is it's such a projection field, right? People see what they want to see. They feel what they want to feel. They throw stuff at you and like, can you own it? And what I also really love, and then I'm going to kind of wrap up and get you to share a little bit about how people can connect with you after this. But there is also something about these kinds of birth stories where there is a lack of bonding with the first woman and in our lives, that
Absolutely.
also means that adulting as a woman who didn't have a woman there present, holding, being our self-esteem, being our nervous system, etc., for that beginning bit. One of the things that I would really like to claim and offer is that it takes a lot of claiming, rewriting, owning, transformation, healing, to be in a place with where with another woman we can really be in that discomfort of the feminine, right? Of that feel like, okay, this is uncomfortable, this is uncomfortable. What am I going to do? I have learned I'm separate, I must back or whatever, right? And to really stay in that and then be like, oh, this is what it feels like to hold myself in the feminine and be with another, and to not be in competition, to not be in scarcity, to not be, you know, whatever. And so I just, yeah, thank you. I see you, you know.
Yeah, beautiful. I see you too. And yeah, and I love the last phrase that you that, because it's all of those things and more. You know, it's ever evolving, and I want to just kind of touch on this, because it's, I think this is a really important turning point for me, and the reason why I create what I create is when I made the decision after I'd written the book, and 10 days later I got an email asking me to be in a Channel 5 documentary called White Nanny, Black Child. And when he spoke, when the director spoke to me about the film, and I remember stopping him and saying, this is going to sound really bold of me, but you need not interview anybody else, because this role is mine. Like, it has my name written on it. Like, it really does. Like, I feel it in my body. This is the role for me.
Yeah.
And so he did. He didn't interview anybody else. And he gave me the role. And, you know, as retreat facilitator, working with those 9 incredible humans on White Nanny, Black Child, and just seeing them after not telling their stories for 30 years, suddenly, not suddenly, it was work, amazing work, you know, opening up and sharing their stories. Like, how empowering was that? And we, you know, we worked together solidly 14-hour days for a week. It came out on Channel 5 last year, October. And then this year in May, we won a BAFTA. And who would have ever thought, never in a million, by sharing this truth and telling our stories, yeah, just didn't compute, but wonderful. And then Netflix bought it in June.
It's so right? exciting.
And so all from sharing, that's why I know how powerful stories are and how we get to hold each other in that story space and that circle space. And yeah, it's just like another level of, I mean, here's the thing, Ebony. I mean, it is a wonderful, it's amazing, but the work continues. It's, you know what I mean? Yeah, the hoorah, the da-da-da-da, and the work continues, right?
Yeah.
But it's a deeper level of work I feel that I can bring to the table now than I probably felt that I was gifting or sharing before. Yeah.
I'm excited to share this episode with people. And, you know, like you said, your work is really for some people and not for others, but there will be somebody, maybe more than somebody, but there'll be somebody listening to this who's like, I'm terrified to, you know, own my story, tell my story, evolve my story, like be in this space. And I want them to reach out and come and find your website, and, like, you know, all your links and everything will be in the show notes to make that very easy.
Beautiful.
But I also want to, again, this is coming back to something that you said on retreat, so I just want to clarify it.
Yes.
Is your, and also there's this, often this thing between Black women, white women, of like, I don't want to say the wrong thing, you know, which also exists all the time.
Yes.
So if there is a white woman listening to this,
who
would love to come and work with you.
Yes.
Thinking, but does Abby only work with Black women? And could you give us a little bit of context of who your work's for and how people can find you?
Yeah, great, great, great. Okay, so really I work with women who are reconnecting to their heart space, women who are willing and open to reconnect to their own story. Because in the unlayering of the story is the unlayering and the rebirth of those women.
Yeah.
And so I'm, you know, I work with women leaders. And when I say the word leader, it makes a picture, but leaders of their own lives. So you're ready to lead your own life right now. And I'm going to put this into context, because for many years, Ebony, I spoke to you about this, I worked solely with Black and brown women.
Yeah.
And now in this next level of evolution for me, I want to share my work with all women that are aligning with the frequency and energy that I'm on, because it's about our collective consciousness that brings us together, not the separation.
Yeah.
And so that's really where I'm coming from. And that's coaching, that's retreats. My latest offering is my Healing Hearts Circle Facilitation Training, which is really working with women who want to hold their own powerful circles. and want to be in that space and hold it and understand the nuances and be in integrity and be the guardian of their circle space and just allow that ripple effect to be felt through so many other women. So I'm, yeah, really, really passionate about that work.
I really see that. And I think from spending more time with you and seeing, you know, the similarities and the differences in the way and, you know, what it is that we're accessing and magnetizing towards us, what I really see is that it's about, and you can tell me if this feels right or wrong for you, but that it's about complex women, right, who perhaps hold two or contrary identities, because there is that piece of like,
yes,
you know,
yes.
For me, I was always too big and too small, and I
yes.
belonged and I did, you know, there was all, you know, these different things of like, I need to be in the distance, but I need to be in it. Like one of the things you reflected on is, you know, you're distant and you're blah, 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 but you're also like, when you talk, you're right in the center of the room. Yes, that's it. You know, like, it's, for me, it's that complexity,
yeah.
Right? The contrariness. And
Yeah.
There's something in the women that, or the, you know, the women that you work with who also hold, whether it is something contrary around their identity.
Yeah.
And whether that is got anything to do with the color of their skin or the context of their environment and how they, you know, how they came to be who they are.
Who they are.
That feels very much more accurate for me of like, of who you are drawing in.
Yeah. 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 That's very, very accurate. And yeah, really beautifully worded in terms of that is that they are my women, you know, they are the women that I am attracting towards me. And I feel that, like you, we can have these, it doesn't even feel like work because we're so aligned to the complexities, even though they're different. But there's an energetic alignment there, that there's a subtle understanding of yes, and we really get to redefine and rewrite that's your story.
Yeah, and I think, you know, similarly to your own experience and to mine, and there's also something about either people will be like yes and totally magnetized towards your you know, this very clear heart and love that you have, and the quiet and the strength, right? Which again, a lot of people are unused to seeing in women, right? Of like big heart, big voice.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Or they might feel really triggered by it.
And yeah.
If you are listening to this and you're like, oh, do you know, I'm one of those people who gets really triggered by big heart, big voice, you could not be in safer hands. Please step, you know, take that courage that we talked about earlier in the conversation and message Abby and get in touch. And you never know what huge alchemy that could lead to.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. Oh, this podcast is going to be amazing, Ebony.
Anything else you want to add or say before I wrap things up?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just flowed beautifully, hasn't it?
Great. I'm going to put all your links in the show notes. If people want to come find you, like, where's the best place to connect?
Probably, I would say my website, definitely. And website, Instagram and LinkedIn are really the places that I show up in.
Great. Good to know. Put all the links in. You have been amazing. It's been a real honour to have this conversation with you. Thank you so, so much.
And you. Take care. Stay blessed. Bye-bye.
This has been Adulting with Ebony. I've been Ebony and you have been great. Thank you so much for all of your support. Please keep listening, liking, rating and sharing so that more people can enjoy and engage with us. If you have not yet reviewed the show, please go over to whichever platform you listen to it on and leave us a review. To take the next step, if you want even more of me and more importantly, more of you in your world, go to ebonyallard.com/welcome, join the mailing list, the Maven Haven, and maybe even get your compass. And I will see you next time.